So I've been gone 2 weeks. Appreciate all of you who came up and introduced yourself to me. Very nice. Appreciate that. But I got to tell you, I've missed being here those 2 weeks. Didn't miss it so much during because obviously we were busy and we were with other brothers and sisters and doing some good things. But just over time, the effect of not being able to be together with you is something I value. And the good thing about being away is that you get to re-experience being back together again. Let me just tell you about a couple of things. Frank told me he loved me this morning, but he always tells me he loves me. I appreciate that. But see, I hadn't heard that from Frank in the last couple of weeks. It means something to me. This morning I sat down. Victoria came after me. She put her hand on my shoulder as she walked by. Victoria's a good friend. Made me feel good. As CJ was passing the plates around, he leaned over to me and said, "Have I already served you?" I just nodded my head. What I wanted to say is, all the time. All the time. In ways that are just very casual and perhaps may not seem like a big deal, I'm on the receiving end of an awful lot of love, kindness, compassion, affection. I do not take that for granted, at least not in my more thoughtful moments. And I thank you for that. And really, that is a big part of what we're talking about during this time in our year as we talk about transformed fellowship. The ability to experience the love of brothers and sisters in ways that are, "Hi, David, I just saw you. I want to talk to you afterwards." Being able to experience that is very near the core of what it means to be a part of a family. And it's something that all of us, to some degree, greater or lesser, have the opportunity to experience. Our text today is Ecclesiastes chapter 4, beginning at verse 9. It's a very familiar passage to us. As a matter of fact, I think it falls in the realm of common sense. I don't mean to seem presumptuous here, but I think any one of us could have written this text. As it turns out, the preacher wrote it. That's what the word Ecclesiastes means, is preacher. Likely Solomon. And he does so, I believe, by inspiration. And so the words are heavier, they're more weighty, because they are words of God. But the truth is, these are things that just make sense to us, aren't they? Ecclesiastes writer says, two are better than one. Two are better than one. Now, can I just share with you that there are times in my life when I have questioned that? I guess it depends on who the other one is, right? There are times I thought, I'd just soon be left alone, thank you very much. But generally speaking, in my life, two are better than one. But how about this? How about, isn't then three better than two? And four better than three? And five better than four? Well, you know, it depends on whether or not you're an introvert or an extrovert. That may not always be right. But still, that's not the point, is it? The point is that it is better not to be alone. It's so many times in our lives. It's just better not to be alone. It's better not to have to carry things by ourselves. Well, many of you know that after I'd been at college a couple of years, my wife and I took a 9-year summer out in western Oklahoma. We weren't expecting it to be a 9-year summer. That's just the way it turned out. And I went to work on an oil drilling rig as a roughneck. And Jerry Hesselrode, who's a member of the church at Estes, had grown up in my hometown or near my hometown. So I knew him, and he'd already been out there, and he gave me a piece of advice. Now, I'm normally pretty reluctant to take Jerry's advice. I'm just kidding. Jerry's a great guy. He's got a good family. I love him. But Jerry said, that's the best kind of advice, the advice you get when you ask for it. I said, you know, what I do? What I need? He said, here's a piece of advice for you. He said, stuff's heavy. If you see somebody trying to lift something, help them. That's pretty good advice, isn't it? Can I just give that to you as advice for life? Life's pretty heavy. You see somebody trying to carry something, help them. We all are beneficiaries of that. We ought to all be beneficiaries of that time after time. Two are better than one. Better not to have to handle this thing alone. Now, okay, these things are kind of hard to see. But I want you to kind of go with me just moment by moment through a bit of the text just to see how this bears out. In Mark chapter 6, Jesus is sending out the 12, and he sends them out two by two. Wouldn't their efforts have been more widely available if they'd gone out one by one? Couldn't they have gone to 12 different places at a time instead of just 6 different places at a time? And the answer, of course, is yes. So why did Jesus do it like that? Well, I think the answer is obvious. Two are better than one. The encouragement that they would need when they experienced rejection, two are better than one. Times when a witness besides the one would be available to say, you know, the things that I'm telling you about, we both experienced these kinds of things. Later on, in Luke chapter 10, he sends out 72 witnesses. And again, he sends them out two by two. Why? For the same reasons. Two are better than one. It's good for them to go out together. In Acts chapter 3, we see Peter and John, and there's no reference to sending here, but obviously a pattern has begun to emerge, hasn't it? Peter and John go up to the beautiful gate. That's the place when they encounter this person who is lame, and ultimately they heal him after saying, you know, we don't have any money, but what we do have, we give you. And then a series of events tumbles out after that that are so well supported by the pair going out and doing that. Later on, they come back. They bear witness of what God has done. The people pray together out of rejoicing. The house shakes. Two are better than one. In Acts chapter 8, when the church in Samaria would benefit from spiritual gifts, and Philip is there and he's been serving, and he possesses these spiritual gifts, but apparently cannot transmit those to others. So Peter and John are sent, but not just because they technically needed somebody else to lay hands on, but because the church there would benefit from the encouragement of older, wiser, more experienced, more mature brothers. And so Peter and John are sent up there to do that. In Acts chapter 13, at the beginning of what we call the first missionary journey of the Apostle Paul, it wasn't his idea. Matter of fact, he was settled in there at Antioch, it appears, was a part of the congregation there. His name is listed along with other faithful members of the body there. The Holy Spirit comes and says in verse 2, "Set apart for me Barnabas and Saul for the work to which I am calling them." The Holy Spirit here validating that two are better than one. And of course, this sends them on a trajectory of service that takes them years and eventually results in not only a lot of people coming to know the gospel, but them coming back to Antioch and talking about what God had done through the pair of them in Acts chapter 14, verses 27 and 28. Later on, it's time Paul wants to take another missionary journey. He talks to Barnabas about it, and you'll remember that there is a disagreement about whether or not they should take John Mark with them. John Mark had apparently deserted them on a previous mission. And Paul says, I just don't think I can depend on him. I don't want to take him. Barnabas says, he needs to do it. I want him to do it. We should take him. Their disagreement was so sharp that they parted ways, but they did not go one direction and one another direction. They went two one direction and two another direction. When they split the team, they divided in a nuclear sort of way. Paul became the nucleus of a mission team that included Silas and others. The camera of the book of Acts kind of follows him from that point. But Barnabas takes John Mark and perhaps others with him. Two are better than one. What we see in the book of Ecclesiastes here is something that we see demonstrated over and over and over again in our lives. Generally speaking, we may have some great moments alone to collect our thinking. There are times when Jesus himself withdrew all by himself just to spend some time in personal devotion, recharging his batteries, getting the perspective that he needed. But it's also the case over and over again that Jesus surrounded himself by others. Even at those moments which are most profound in his life, the transfiguration, for example, when he takes Peter, James, and John with him, or when he prays in the Garden of Gethsemane, this agonizing prayer for God's assistance, he takes with him followers and asks them to wait with him. We see the benefits of times when more than one of us can accomplish something that we would not together. Two are better than one. And the writer of Ecclesiastes gives us three examples that I'd like for us to spend a little time thinking about today. First of all, he says, woe to him who is alone when he falls. You know, I wish I could say that we could live a life without the falls. I mean, I think it would be pretty silly for us to say, yeah, I prefer a life where I fall down and injure myself and get hurt and struggle. That's the kind of life that I want. Well, that's not what we want. But the truth is, whether we want it or not, this is reality. Nobody lives a life where they don't fall. Have you ever known people who just seem to live a charmed life? Golden boys, I call them, or girls. Everything just kind of seems to fall into place for them. You know, it only looks like that because you don't know. You don't know about when they fall sometimes. It's not maybe quite as obvious, maybe not quite as visible. Everybody that I've truly come to get to know, I found out they've fallen, or that they are falling, or that they have fallen. You will fall. You will fall. But God does not want us to fall alone. Don't fall alone. Many of you will remember a commercial that was on television a number of years. It's become almost legend. I hear people who certainly are not old enough to have been around when the commercial was airing on television say these fateful words. You ready? You can say it with me if you want. Help! I've fallen and I can't get up. We laugh about that, you know, because it's so cheesy. Though, of course, the circumstance to which it refers is not silly at all. It could be quite serious, and so those life alert bracelets or whatever it was that they were selling are very valuable. And if you have one, I'm glad that you do. You're welcome to say those words if you want to. If it's either fun or not fun. I hope somebody comes to your aid. But that commercial alluded to exactly the challenge or the problem that this passage mentions. It's a terrible thing to fall and be alone. Now, I like people with me pretty much all the time. Okay, I'm kind of a textbook extrovert in that way. I am alone some. I have to be. I've got to study and do other things like that that require aloneness. But the truth is, if you want to come and just sit in my office while I do it, that'd be okay with me. Because I like people around nearly all the time. But I'm alone sometimes. Sometimes I'm alone when I don't want to be alone. Sometimes I'm alone when it would be better if I were not alone. For a variety of reasons. It might be better if I were not alone when I fall. But you know what? It might be better if I were not alone just before I fell. Too. When I'm experiencing temptation, for example, there are temptations that come upon me that are private temptations. Temptations that would not come if somebody was with me. So the next time I sin, it's your fault. No, it's not, but it would be better if I were not alone. There are times when physically we might have to be alone. There are some things that you just have to do by yourself, I suppose. But I wonder if we do not make ourselves alone when we ought not. I was just flipped on the television yesterday. I hadn't watched television in 2 weeks. I flipped on the television yet, and I'm very selective about what I'll watch on television. Whatever is on. It's the only thing I'll watch. Well, I flipped through the channel, but I do have my preferences, so I was flipping through the channels trying to find something that I could tolerate. I didn't want to go to sleep, so I didn't watch golf. But about the third or fourth channel I flipped to was a story on Ryan Leaf. Some of you guys know Ryan Leaf, professional football player, did not have a long and storied career. As a matter of fact, he was kind of a washout. Quite a bit of ability, done extremely well in high school and college, but it just didn't happen. You may not know the rest of his story, which involved a cycle of dependency on prescription drugs, theft, and all kinds of other things that eventually landed him in jail. And he was talking about this, and he said, when I was in that prison cell, he said, he was there for 3.5 years before he was paroled. It was a 7-year sentence. Three and a half years, he said, I went outside twice Now here you're talking about a guy whose life has been spent out on fields playing sport. He went outside twice. He didn't go out of his cell. He just sat there and felt sorry for himself for the first year and a half. You ever done that? You ever been alone when you could have been with somebody who would have encouraged you? Sometimes when we fall, sometimes when things are happening to us that are bad, it's almost like we just want to be miserable. Whether we feel like that's just what we deserve, and therefore we're just going to gut it out, or whether it just doesn't seem quite right to be okay, considering how far we've fallen or how bad things are. You don't have to fall alone. Even Jesus, though he never fell into sin, fell on a number of occasions. Setbacks and challenges of different kinds. Even the cross, though it was certainly his mission, he had every intention of doing it, still was at the mercy of others at that time and experienced great pain and heartache. And yet Jesus says to his disciples, come be with me. Come be with me. You see, he knew he did not have to be alone. Certainly he may say, okay, well, if I was going to pick somebody to come be with me, I wouldn't use Peter. That man is a goofball. I mean, he's probably going to say the wrong thing. He say something all right. It's probably going to be the wrong thing. Or he's probably going to do something. Certainly, Jesus had no equal here on this earth. There was no one like him. It's ironic, isn't it? While Jesus came here and lived life like we live it, we've never lived life like he lived it. So it would be easy for him to say, listen, I got this, I'm good. You probably couldn't help anyway. After all, you're just a miserly little human being. But Jesus persistently surrounded himself by people at those times when he struggled or was carrying a heavy weight. You will fall. Don't fall alone. Don't fall alone. There's some of you right now who are trying to carry a weight by yourself that you should not, that you ultimately perhaps cannot. Don't fall alone. Two are better than one. The preacher goes on to say, if two lie together, they'll keep warm. But how can one keep warm alone? I remember hearing a story. You know, you hear stories from people and you think, okay, that's just too weird. And I'm not sure I want to know that, but I can't unknow it. I'll not tell you who it is, but there is a person who serves on the board of trustees of Fried Hardeman University who told me a story one time of traveling. I don't even know where he was, but he said, we got stuck out in the middle of nowhere at this train station in the middle of the night. Temperatures were dropping. They shut the doors of the train station. We were just outside. And he said, me and this other guy, and we just found a place down next to the tracks against the edge of the concrete, out of the wind, and we cuddled. We were cold. And okay, I don't want to picture that, okay? I'm sorry that I've done that to you. At least you don't have a face associated with it. I do. But that's the real thing. I mean, in isolation, things can get cold. Cold, dark times will come where you need warmth from somebody else. Seek it. Look for it. Ask for it. Don't sit and shudder in the cold. There's no reason for that. You and I are surrounded by a family. Just today, I have received a number of hugs. Nikos gave me his customary hug when I came in. Sure do appreciate that. Others of you as well. People care about me, and I get to know that. I live in recognition of that. But there is a tendency, I think, during those times when things are at their darkest, to feel so pitiful that you don't want to be pitied, to feel so miserable that you just feel like you don't want to drag anybody else into it, maybe. Or maybe it's shame. Things are a mess in my life and I don't want you to know it. And even if you do know it, I want to pretend that you don't. so we don't seek warmth. There are people around us who would gladly open up their arms and envelop us in their love and compassion. But we stay there alone in the cold and the dark. In Acts chapter 2, the Bible talks to us about the fellowship that the church was experiencing. And this was from our point of view, this was a beautiful, wonderful time in the existence of the church. The words that are spoken in Acts chapter 2 are glowing. Many people are obeying the gospel, and those who have been brought to Christ are of one accord. They are enjoying each other's lives. They're meeting together regularly. But you know what you don't see? And I think it's there. Do you think this was a time without trouble for these new Christians? You really think so? You really think that all of those people who had abandoned the religion of their youth and started something new, that everything is okay there, that they didn't receive any opposition? Do you really think these people who made that decision while they were in Jerusalem and have just not really gone back home? There are some people who have apparently stayed for some time during this period between Passover and Pentecost. It's during this period of time that they've obeyed the gospel. Do you think that they did not receive any opposition? Do you think there was not maybe a sense of dread about going back and telling others that they changed? Over the course of the record that we see in the New Testament, there's some things happening there. We know that during that period of time, when we get to Acts chapters 4 and 5, we know that people are struggling, many of them financially, because there's a collection that's been taken up. People are selling property and giving the proceeds to brothers and sisters to help them buy food, things of that nature. We know later on the Apostle Paul becomes a part of taking up collection from other places and bringing it back to Jerusalem so that they can help meet that need. Is this a trouble-free time? No, it's not. Why don't we read about those troubles in Acts chapter 2? They weren't alone. They weren't dealing with that alone. You see, most of our troubles are worse because we try to deal with them alone, because we do not seek the warmth and comfort that we might otherwise experience. In Acts chapter 9, the story is told of this beautiful woman. We don't know what she looked like. We know she was a beautiful person. Dorcas or Tabitha, who had died. Now, you and I know the end of the story. Peter's going to come and he's going to raise her back to life. But the people who are gathered around her at that time, around her body, don't know that. Not yet. And yet the stories they are telling are stories of assurance and hope. They are remembering a life well lived and the relationships that they had with her, and they are receiving comfort from those. One of the fundamental promises Jesus speaks about in the Beatitudes in Matthew chapter 5 is that those are blessed who mourn. That just seems too ironic to be true. But the reason, of course, is given because they will find comfort. When you seek that warmth from above and from the people of God, you do not experience that cold and dark alone. When the dark times come, seek warmth. Do not keep to yourself. Though a man might prevail against one who is alone, two will withstand him. Now here we're talking about violence. Times when we're not just talking about the ordinary circumstances of life, perhaps. We're talking about a situation where you face opposition and you are on the verge of being overwhelmed. Two can withstand. There are powerful threats that oppose us in this world. I don't have many enemies. I am better treated than I deserve to be. But you know, two things. First of all, that's not always true. I've had enemies. I know, as sweet as I am, you can't even imagine that, but I'm kidding. But it's also true sometimes that we perceive opposition because of situations and circumstances. Not everybody agrees with me. things that I care about, somebody else may have a different point of view about some of those kinds of things. And I may have to defend, I may perceive that I have to defend myself. But there are true threats in this world. Satan is real. And what Peter says about him later on in this very same book is still as true now as it was then. He still prowls about, seeking whom he may devour. There are threats both physically and spiritually in our world that have to be faced. Call for reinforcements. Don't do it by yourself. Can I suggest if somebody were to break into my house, it sure would be nice if you'd be there when that happened to help me. That's probably not going to happen because most of you don't spend the night at my house. Dana would help me. We've got a worthless dog that would probably do nothing at all, cower over on the side of the yard. Besides, she can't even reach the house because she's on one of those electric fences. So anyway, but most areas of our lives, it's certainly possible for us to say, I feel I'm in danger. Help me out. We're not supposed to be alone at times like that. Now, I understand. See, most of us in this room are United Statesians. We're Americans. I understand the people in Canada are also Americans. But anyway, and Mexico, and all of South America. But anyway, so hence I've coined this new term. But there is within us this deeply bred sense of individualism. We admire most those who just take the bull by the horns, take care of things on their own. Right? Even as I was preparing this lesson, I had in my mind a mental image of Rambo. Rambo, he's no, I don't want any help. I've got to do this by myself. Anyway, so he's out there. He's just taking care of everything. John Cena, Steven Seagal. I mean, these are people that... don't watch some of these people's movies. They're nasty. Okay, but I'm just saying, these are the kind of characters that we sometimes look at who sort of define how we think we're supposed to deal with the challenges that we face in life. And so sometimes because of that, we feel almost as if we are not whole if we feel like we have to have help when we deal. Now, some of you people are not like this. Some of you people, bless your hearts, are so good to ask for help and you know that you need it. You're so humble. I appreciate that very much. For the other 95% of us in this room right here, it's a challenge for us to and to seek help when we need it. It's me. I'm right here. I moved. I don't know if you guys saw that. I'm that sneaky. But it is difficult for us sometimes to seek the help that we need. There is a certain pride that is a real problem for many of us. It is at the root of our dealing with a lot of things that we deal with by ourselves unnecessarily. So I'm going to challenge us today to not be defined by our pride. When God has put us together in a family which He determined and designed to be able to help meet our needs. God never wanted us to be alone. When God designed the man, it's the first evaluative comment He made besides, it's good. And that was, it's not good for the man to be alone. And I think that has a whole lot more to do with a whole lot more than simply designing a woman. I think it is that God recognized, knew from the beginning, that human beings were social creatures. He made us this way. And that we had needs that would be too big for any individual person to address alone. A threefold cord, not easily broken. It's kind of interesting, isn't it, that all along He's been saying, two are better than one, two are better than one, two are better than one, and now He says a threefold cord is not easily broken. Simple enough, I suppose. This is the way ropes are made. and the dependability of that resource is connected not only with those three individual cords, but with the individual strands, the individual fibers. We went to a place wherever we were, I can't remember. We've made 500,000 miles in the last 14 days. But anyway, went to this one of these villages, you know, where they show you the old ways of doing things. And I was looking again at this person spinning fibers into thread on a spinning wheel. You know what holds those threads together? Nothing. I'm not sure if you guys have ever paid any attention to that. The threads are simply spun together. No adhesive of any kind. You don't find one. I mean, if you shear a sheep, for example, you don't find individual hairs that are that long. You tie them all together in knots or use glue on them. No, you just take those little short fibers and you just spin them together. And ultimately, you spin them together. They are so closely connected, so tightly interwoven, that they are as one. And they simply cannot be pulled apart. I find that borderline miraculous. But metaphorically, that's exactly what has happened to the people of God in the body of Christ. We're not held together by any kind of glue. And no one of us is all that much by ourselves. But we are so closely woven that we are like that threefold cord, not only at the level of the cords, but even at the level of the fibers. And thus, we're not easily broken. But it may be that we do what we are inclined to do and that we separate ourselves from that. You know, when Joshua was about to take over as the new leader of the people of Israel and they're on the threshold of taking the promised land, God told Joshua what he'd already told Moses. Told him, be strong and courageous, but he also said, I will never leave you nor forsake you. We need that connection. And first and foremost today, if that connection is not strong, allow God to restore that connection. But it is also true, by the way, that same promise is made to us in Hebrews chapter 13. But it's also true that God has brought us together. And He does not want us to try to manage this Christian life alone. He has brought us into a caravan, a wagon train of sorts, and we traverse this new territory together. We drove, you know, it's a whole lot easier to make that drive to California in a motorhome than it would have been in a covered wagon. It still took us 3 days. But I just imagined, before the roads and before motorhomes, you just knew a direction, and you're making that trip, which would have taken months. Only a fool would do that alone. Life's like that. Can I say this and be taken in a spirit that I mean it? Don't be a fool. Don't be a fool. Don't try to go it alone. God is your helper. The people of God stand ready to help as well. Do you have a need? If it's a need for salvation, God and only God can meet it. But He will today. Your step of faith results in a chain of events where God makes things happen. His grace will be applied to you in the waters of baptism, and you need not go it alone. If you've wandered away or if you're struggling and trying to deal with things on your own, don't be a fool. The people of God are here to gather around and help. If you have any need at all, would you make that known as we stand and sing together?